Well, that's the Dirty Dozen Brass Band out of New Orleans with John the Revelator. It's a gospel call and response song that was first recorded by blues singer Blind Willie Johnson in 1930. And it's from the Dozen's incredible 2004 album, Funeral for a Friend, an album completely of gospel and spiritual songs. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you know what day it is. It is Free Your Mind Friday. We have our own weekly caucus going here, and it is about giving space to ideas and opinions and information worthy of note. And we discuss the significant issues and events of the week. And so if you have something to contribute, here's what you do. You call 888-874-4888, and we listen to what you have to say with the idea that some people may follow through and address what you offer, whether they agree, endorse it, or they disagree and give their particular point of view. It's about forming community. And we do that by exchanging ideas, exchanging our thoughts, exchanging our analyses, and exchanging our views of what's going on to help each other understand. This is peer-to-peer education, if you will. So we do that because it is important. And in my view, this is what radio should do, keep people talking to each other. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's start with Dallas, Texas. Sarah, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Eutrice.
Thank you, and to you too, Sarah. How are you doing?
I am doing not too bad, Eutrice, and greetings, of course, to the PRN listening audience.
Thank you.
You are more than welcome, and I must extend a warm weekend greetings and hope that everyone will go out and do something fun and just leave off of all of this nonsense with this voting and election and all of this, that everybody is geared up in your trees, because it's an insanity. I've heard some of your callers, and Jay in particular. I'm going to pick a bone with Jay, my good friend from New York. I could not believe in my ears when I heard Jay on the phone yesterday say he was voting for Donald Trump. I'm just saying that, you know, I know Jay is very astute, as well as all of the callers that calls in here. But to hear somebody is saying that they're going to vote for Donald Trump, I'm at a total loss. So I'm hoping that sometime in the near future, he can really explain himself to me, because everything this man...
Jay has to account for himself. But did you appreciate his argument?
I somewhat could get his argument, Eutrice, but Donald Trump is running on a white nationalist ticket. That's what Donald Trump is running on. I don't see what we're going to get from a white nationalist. We didn't get anything from his doing segregation and reconstruction. We didn't. So I don't see why we think that in 2017, whoever this white person is that's going to be in this White House, because it's going to be somebody white, that we're going to expect to get something from a white nationalist point of view, when we never put forth anything. We have these elitist Negroes who are basically saying that they are our spokesperson, but they're their own spokesperson, because they're securing themselves and a position for themselves under this white nationalist regime that will be taken over. That's all that they are doing, and they're using us, as you have stated so eloquently, as bargaining chips. We are nowhere in play. We have nothing to gain from this. So these black women, and what was especially troubling to me, Eutrice, was when I saw Eric Garner's mother, and I saw Sandra Bland's mother, as well as Jordan Davis, the young man that was shot for loud music in Florida, as well as Trayvon Martin. They all gotten on this Hillary Clinton ticket talking about she is the best choice. You see, women are putting gender issue ahead of everything else. And as Ali said yesterday, Haiti and Libya, that alone should knock her out of running. That woman has committed genocide in Libya, and she has committed genocide and theft in Haiti. That alone should tell any person on black, because as a result of what she did in Libya, it caused the genocide of thousands of indigenous black Libyans who had to flee from Libya into Mali and Chad and all of these other areas to destabilize those areas. And that in turn ended up causing problems in Timbuktu, where we were told a lot of the ancient African transcripts were being destroyed by these radicals who ran up in there and decided to start destroying it because it's considered to be idolatry or whatever, you know, all of this stuff. This stuff all started with Hillary Clinton. It all started as a result of her. And we have Haiti with that ongoing debacle in Haiti right now. That is her doing, her and her husband and her daughter. So I really and truly cannot understand why anyone black would say that this woman is the best person to go to put into office. It to me, it boggles the mind.
Well, okay. What does one say when you've made your case, Sarah?
I don't know what to say, you sweet, but to tell these people that it's still the beginning of the month, you can still go get your meds. You know, if you need to get it within which to regulate your neurons and get yourself, you know, to think and function like you normally should do for the rest of the month, please, you know, go ahead and get that help.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Yatrice.
Oh, my gosh. New York, Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm fine. You know, Yatrice, I missed the program that Sarah is referring to, Jay's call. Can you briefly tell me what he said? I'm just curious. Why he rationalized voting for Trump?
He rationalized voting for Trump because Trump is talking about bringing jobs to the economy.
Oh,
and he is convinced that this is a pretty good response. The other candidates are not talking enough about jobs, and he put jobs as a number one issue.
I see. Okay.
He's not happy, but he also made it clear he's not necessarily enthralled with Donald Trump. But in light of the pickings, he said that Trump is not a bad choice in light of what there is to choose from.
I see. Well, I guess it's an example of how desperate we are, you know. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about Trump and place him in some kind of historical context, if I can. You know, Trump seems to combine two qualities that almost seem to be antithetical to one another. On one hand, when he makes his references, if you can call it, to domestic policy, I don't think he really has any coherent policy decisions. He's the kind of a guy who seems to make things up as he goes along, which is why so many of his positions are paradoxical. But we know that this is a person who thinks that that most Mexican men are, you know, potential rapists, and most Muslim immigrants carry homemade bombs. So we know where he's coming from. We know that he's a racial demagogue, and that he's looking to, you know, to really foster a constituency based on these demagogic concerns. There's nothing, you know, very arcane about that. He's very open about it. On the other hand, strangely enough, Trump, and this is not meant as an endorsement for him, I want you and all the listeners to realize this, but a way to try to understand how his mind works. Trump has, seems to look at all of the foreign policy misadventures that we've gotten into. He looks at them through the lens and the projection of his own personal life, primarily because he's so narcissistic. So everything comes out of that self-absorbed lens from which all social reality emanates. So he looked at the Iraq War, and he said that the Iraq War was a bad investment. And it was. I mean, Joe Stiglitz wrote a book 6 years ago saying that it would cost $3 trillion. Now it's much more than that. The point is that, and he says the same thing about Libya, bad investment. About the Syrian farce, he says that We don't even know who the rebels are. And then about the Ukraine, he says that they have negative assets. We shouldn't even be involved. Notice that he doesn't say anything about the moral implications of our actions. Oh, no, that's not important. But, of course, that's not important to any of them. The only thing that matters is the efficaciousness of the policy. And from this point of view, whether or not the bottom line is realized, is it going to be red or is it going to be black? But the point is, he is the only candidate who has said that. That's how pathetic this election campaign has been. Not even Chairman Sanders, Comrade Sanders, whatever you want to call him, El Comandante Sanders, has said anything like this. He just goes along with the imperial project writ large.
What's going on with people today? people are cutting to the quick today. My gosh.
what I wanted to get at about Trump is that he's really, his foreign policy positions, as strange as they are, really come, and here I'm showing my age, come out of a long-standing Republican tradition that has been dormant for at least a decade and a half because of the seizure of the Republican Party by the neoconservatives, especially in foreign policy. And that is the, you know, this strong isolationist sentiment which informed the party from the end of World War I right through Eisenhower's election in 52. Old-timers will remember Senator Robert Taft, who was called Mr. Republican, was supposed to get the nomination in 44 and 48, but Thomas Dewey of New York got it, and then in 52 Eisenhower got it. So in some ways, he reflects that kind of attitude, and that's one of the reasons why the Republican honchos, the bigwigs on the Republican National Committee, are so panicked. They're panicked for a couple of reasons. One is because Trump is taking them down the Whig road to oblivion. People who read history will remember that the Whig Party was a viable party in the early part of the 1850s. It was gone by 1860 because they could not adapt to the needs of abolitionism. And I think these guys know that that Trump can't win this election. Literally, the Red Sea would have to part, and we should be able to cross it in order for Trump to win the election. The fear campaign that the Democrats are going to employ is going to be so manifest that it will make Adolf Hitler look like a pacifist compared to Trump. So he's not going to win. But in fact, if he does show signs of winning, which could occur if the economy collapses before the election, and believe me, that's a possibility, a real possibility. And then the Democrats, as they should be, will be blamed for it. And Trump could get a lot of votes, just like the Nazis, who did very badly in the 1928 elections, state elections in Germany, did much better in 1932 after the international economy crashed. So there is an outside possibility that he will win, but they're opposed to his candidacy because he's going to destroy the party. He's going to threaten all state seats. He's going to threaten congressional seats, and the party could really be hurt very badly by his candidacy. That's one reason. The other reason is because his foreign policy is not neoconservative, and that can't be allowed. And that may even be more frightening to them than the fact that he might temporarily throw the party into oblivion. So that is what I think is going on here. And in fact, I see a parallel between this election and the election of 1972, when the leaders of the Democratic National Committee brazenly went over to the other side and supported Nixon because of McGovern's strong anti-war status. And I think the situation is similar here, where you see a lot of the Republican bigwigs either supporting Clinton, but probably trying to get a Bloomberg to enter the race. That's one of the reasons why he had his little feelers last week. He's egotistical enough to think it's a patriotic duty to enter. And he could enter even if the Republicans don't allow him to seize the nomination at the convention. He could enter as a third-party candidate and get a lot of Republican supporters to come with him. That's another possibility. And if, in fact, it looks like he's going to win, there's always the deep state option, which has occurred a number of times in the last century. When I say the deep state option, I'm thinking of the intelligence services, the FBI, the CIA. I think of Martin Luther King, and I think of his speech in April of 1967, attacking the war at Riverside Church in New York, and Johnson immediately removing the Secret Service detail, and both Johnson and King knew what that meant. So these are, I think, are the possibilities that are coming in November. And we should not underestimate the possibility that the turn of events will superimpose themselves over this election itself.
Okay. Well, thank you. Quite a lot to consider there. Quite a lot.
Bye now.
Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Greetings, as always, my professor. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, Jose. How are you today?
The elders here just being treated to a freeing of my mind. I look forward to this day. My professor, you know, I am of the opinion as an old timer, a long, long time ago, that there's a battle, there has been a battle going on in this world, and the battle has been between good and evil. And evil has won, hands down. Evil has been prevailing for centuries, and from the looks of things, it will continue on even into way into the other centuries coming, unless something miraculous happened to alter that course. I listened to the different opinions of the electoral process that is taking place here in this country. And I sense a long time ago that we don't have a horse in any of these races. And there's talk about the progressive elements in this country. I don't know who they are. I've outside of you and this program and a few others, I don't know where the progressives are, where the progressive movements are. I don't know. Maybe somebody can point me in those directions. I am of the opinion that both parties will rally behind their candidate. And I'm of the opinion that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. And based upon how things are going on the other side of the coin, it seems as if Her Royal Highness Hillary and the King, Bill, is going to be crowned a royal family on that side of the coin. Who will conquer eventually? Which evil side? Because both sides are evil. Which one is going to reign supreme? I don't know. But all I can tell you is that white supremacy will be the benefactor. I will always be the benefactor. Because no matter who wins, white supremacy and evil will prevail. We are running around having these vassals in our community that are falling over, they're bending over, they used to bend over backwards to appease the master. Now they're not only bending over backwards, but they're also bending over forward. So they're vacillating backwards and forwards to facilitate their masters. We don't have anybody out there fighting on our behalf. We are the little people, we are trying whatever little we can do. But those who are in the forefront, those who have access to power, so-called power, I mean, real power, or imagined power, they are not there negotiating on our behalf. They are there negotiating on their behalf and willingly doing the bidding of their masters. And how we are going to get out of this situation, I don't know. Wherever we are as an African people, we are under siege, be it in this country, be it in Central and South America, be it in the Caribbean, on the African continent. We have these vassals that are willing to sell our people out. And they're not even doing it for the going rate, their traditional rate of 30 pieces of silver. Some of them are taking one piece, some are taking two, some are taking five, but they are not even holding out for the third piece of silver. We don't know what these rascals are negotiating, what they're negotiating for on our so-called behalf. And I wish they would come to us, before they make these under the table deals with their masters, and at least try to act as if they're asking for something, they're demanding something, but they're going off on their own. I have to ask you,
is it not the issue here that the community that elects them, these selected individuals who present themselves for election, they've been selected by their parties to be elected. Isn't it really a situation in which the community itself has just negated its own responsibility to keep these folks in check and to grow its leadership? Its own leadership. If you grow your own leadership, and if you keep tabs on them, and if you exercise the leverage that you have by the constant monitoring of their conduct in office, whether they are staying true to your interests or not, remove them if they're not, elect new leadership if they're not, then here is the dilemma. We can't expect, given the way politics is run, we can't expect these people to be left unattended and still to do the right thing. That is statistically not the way it is going to work. So what is your prescription for the community end of things, where the leverage does exist, the power does exist to keep people in check?
I have said it time and time again. Those elected officials in our community, if they don't fear us, I don't want the elected officials to love me. I don't want to love them. I have who is to love me. I don't want them to, they must fear us. And I've said it time and time again. If these elected officials don't have any fear of us, who supposedly vote for them and put them in office, they will continue to do what they do. And my professor, I've been to many events where our people are keeping these gatherings. And as I've said to them time and time again, it's two reasons why I attend these events. Because when I go to these events and I find myself voicing my concerns and trying to rally our people to do the right thing and go in the right direction, you are like an anomaly in this gathering. Folks look upon you as if you're a pariah, because you are saying things that are not politically correct. You are saying things that make their bosses uncomfortable. And so if you are the only one that is saying the thing that is necessary, you can't get anywhere. And I've said oftentimes, when I go to a gathering where our people are, it's two reasons why I attend. Number one, I go because, as an old timer in the struggle for all these decades, I am trying constantly that when I go there, that we will have what most these Christians call that great epiphany. So we can have this great awakening and understand what you and many other leaders, great leaders, have been trying to teach us and to tell us how we have to go about and straighten out our business. And I want to be there when that moment comes, because I want to come make my contribution, so that when I go through the gates and I meet Malcolm and Marcus and those people, and they ask me what the hell was going on down there on earth, I can tell them the movement has started. And the last reason, the second reason why I attend, is because I am an eternal sucker for punishment. Wherever my people are concerned, sucker for punishment. So I go and I constantly hope, and I make my opinion known and make it heard in no unfashioned, unseasoned way. My professor, I try, I actually try, I walk the extra mile. But many of our people are not accustomed to the truth. They don't know how to handle the truth. So for centuries, they have been told all these lies, that they get accustomed to the lies and they don't know how to handle it. Your program is a program that should be disseminated in all the homes and our communities and the schools and so forth. But instead, these people are hooked on the CIN and the CNNs and the MSNBCs and all these programs. But that's not where the mind should be, but that's where their mind is.
Yes. It's a long road. It remains a long road. But the thing, Jose, is we still have to walk it.
And of course, I can't give up.
No, we can't. We can't give up at all. I thank you so much for calling in today.
And I thank you for being
like the
here
way
because
you put a little humor in everything. So it is a pleasant listen. I really do appreciate the frankness and openness that you share your thoughts with. It's very refreshing, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, my press.
Okay. Let's go to Berkeley. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. What's good by you today?
Well, I have something entirely different than what everybody is talking about. I recently read an article about using lasers for space travel. It's called photonic laser propulsion. And since light is composed of photons, these laser rocket engines using light for instead of rocket fuel could get us to Mars in just 3 days. And this is very exciting news. And I have an idea for what I call deep space travel. I call it electron propulsion drive, using electrons instead of photons to power our spaceships. And if we travel far away from celestial bodies like our sun and other stars, space becomes very cold. It's called the cosmic microwave background radiation, and it permeates the entire universe. And the cosmic microwave background radiation is approximately minus 270 degrees Celsius, which is near absolute zero. And superconducting magnets like those used in magnetic levitating trains that float railroad trains above the tracks use superconducting magnetic repulsion that operate at very low temperatures close to absolute zero. And conducting materials allow for the free flow of electrons without any form of resistance. So superconducting rocket engines cooled by the cosmic microwave background radiation of space itself, which is near absolute zero, would create electron propulsion rocket engines that'll birth us to the stars. That's it.
Your contribution today. Thank you so much for it. I'm trying with my last two working brain cells to wrap my brain around that. I will understand it someday, but thank you so much for calling. From New York City, Fidel, you're on the air. What are your thoughts?
Well, hello, and I'm still spinning myself. I tried to follow as much as I could. But I must tell you that I am sitting down because I was dizzy. At any rate, a very intelligent observation, but getting back to the conversation before, Jose, his passion is beyond amazing. I loved it. And the lady that first called also was pretty intense. And
Sarah.
I love that because that's what we need.
Yes, we do.
So, I wanted to also address the second caller that kind of gave a jab to Bernie Sanders by calling him El Comandante. I was named after the original El Comandante that I'm sure he's referring to. And in observation, I was raised to hate this man. And as I start reading history and I start getting more aware of the comparisons between that country and the country in which I was raised, which is this country, I can tell you that at least that country, my country of birth, provided for the people that had never had a voice before. They all of a sudden were available to get an education. They were allowed to seek medical attention. And if it were not for the belligerence of this empire and its allies, God knows where Cuba would be now today. I have many friends that are in the pharmaceutical industry. My mother studied industrial chemistry in the University of Havana. And I can tell you that my friends who would attend these conferences, these medical conferences, would oftentimes come back where there was a Cuban panel, and they would tell me how enlightened and how brilliant the Cuban scientists were. So we've seen that Cuba can still survive with the meager possibilities of trading with very limited countries and with very limited resources, and has even been able to help whether there's an Ebola crisis or whether there's a war in Africa that is being waged by other empires. Cuba has always been there helping the other people. So if it comes to backing up a person that has similarities to El Comandante or people that have similarities to this empire, I sure as hell will back somebody that is more aligned with Fidel Castro, El Comandante, than with any of the presumptive nominees. And I just wanted to say also that black people need to realize you do not need an invitation for anything. You do not need an invitation to participate. I don't understand why they keep on putting the onus on Bernie Sanders. Well, why hasn't he reached out? I think that the platform is pretty simple. He has reached out to everybody generally. It's not about one group versus the other. It's about us. And another thing, I was a contributor. I own a small restaurant in New York City. Every night I would send food down to Occupy Wall Street. I was at Occupy Wall Street rallies. I met Chris Hedges. I met Laura Flanders. I met so many brilliant people, normal, common people as well. And I often ask myself, I live in a black community in Jersey City, and I often ask myself, where are the black people? We need black people to come down to Occupy Wall Street. And that's where I'm saying black people do not need to be invited to anything. They need to show up. And that's my contribution for the day. I love finding your program, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Fidel, for contributing today. Very, very insightful. Thank you so much. Well, let's hear from Clara of Philadelphia.
Hello, Eutrice. I hope you're well. And hello, audience.
Thank you.
I want to just follow up on the last statement that was made by the last statement made by the last caller.
Fidel, of New York.
Named after. Oh, yes. Okay, Fidel, it's too bad that the black people, we don't show up. And I think so much about what has happened, and I think I realize now there have been so many layers, as my grandson calls it, layers and layers of the impoverishment of the spirits of black people who have succumbed to it for reasons I don't yet fully understand. The latest event was the all-out support of Hillary Clinton, and it has something to do with an inability to absorb, a refusal almost to absorb new information. And an example is that calling Sanders, maybe thinking of him as irrelevant because he doesn't come to us. Hillary comes to us with a pack of lies. She comes to us with a past of total destructiveness in terms of black people. I didn't call for this, but I just wanted to respond and say it's not easily understood. I approach people individually, and I want to say this. I thought of making up cards if PRN would allow me to, with PRN on it and some approved narrative on it, and use it as an entree to talk to people. It's just a thought, and I'll explore it. But I mainly was thinking of statements made about Donald Trump. I still think that he's probably the best of all candidates for this country at this time. Number one, he reflects the true nature of the basic character of this country. This will be shown to the world. It's being shown to the world. It will affect the status of this country in the world. If he becomes president, there's going to be he'll throw us into total turmoil. He doesn't know what he's doing. He does he does operate from one moment to the next, totally narcissistic. I do not know that he would take us to war except by accident. As I see it, he's a person who wants only to build hotels in China and in Russia. I don't see that black people have anything to lose or gain in any of these elections, except possibly from Hillary, who will just continue all the policies that we're living under today. I'm for disruption. I'm for this destructiveness of the system. I wish Bernie Sanders would, upon his defeat, say the same kinds of things about the Democrat Party as Donald Trump is demonstrating regarding the Republican Party, leaving a path of possibility for at least a third party, or some, if not a party, an organization for peace and labor. It should be called the Peace and Labor Party. I'm just saying that I know I'm thinking outside the box, but I feel a lot more calm now that things are going the way they are, and I can sit back and enjoy the spectacle.
Thank you, Clara, for your call today. From
Thank
Brooklyn,
you.
David, you're on the air.
Yes, oh boy, it's a pleasure to hear you every day. You know,
Thank
a couple
you.
Things have come to my mind. The caller yesterday, I think it was Joel, that talked about voting for Trump, and he thought about jobs. Well,
oh, that's Jay. Jay was yesterday.
Oh, Jay, yes, Jay. Doesn't he really understand that corporate capitalism is not about creating jobs? The people who do the work for the corporate capitalists are the slaves or but some people who work for very little or next to nothing. This is not about creating jobs. It's about creating profits, not jobs. That's one thing I have in mind. The other thing is that we've been talking about these Negro politicians, and everybody needs to understand that those people have to be vetted before by other folks before they and selected before they're allowed to be elected by some of these black folks that are voting for them. They don't get to represent the black community. They had to be vetted before they get to that stage. And that's important to know because they don't really represent you. The other thing is that yesterday we talked about Libya and the series in the New York Times. It was somewhat interesting. But I don't hear anyone talking in great detail about that so-called rebellion in Benghazi and the Asian provocateurs who probably started that rebellion and supplied the people with arms and that sort of thing. No one talks about that. I don't think that was just a spontaneous thing for people who had the highest standard of living of all the 54 African countries. Why would they be doing that? Why would they be destroying their place when they're doing so well? No one talks about that. That I believe that probably Mrs. Clinton had something to do with that before there was a rebellion. So that needs to be really investigated. And this idea of, you know, you attack Colonel Gaddafi and his forces to protect the people in Libya. Well, how about the Palestinians in 2014 when the group in the Zionist group in Palestine, in Israel rather, attacked the Palestinians and killed hundreds and hundreds of them? What about their protection? Was there no attempt to protect them? Or how about the people in the Congo, where millions of them have been killed as the Western powers, led by the United States, does everything it can to steal the resources of Congo and most of the time not pay for anything, but get it through Uganda and Rwanda. They're buddies with those two regimes in there that are in charge of those two countries. So that's what's on my mind today, and I'm just wondering if other people are thinking in the same way. I mean, it's a terrible situation. I very much hope that these people who are hoop-earning and hollering, I wonder if they know about these things. How could a black person in South Carolina know about the things that that I have just talked about? I don't know. If they're reading the corporate media and listen to the corporate television and radio, there's no chance that you know much about this. But if you're going to be an intelligent person here, you have to do some studying and searching out to get the information that you need.
Thank you so much, David, for your contribution today. 888-874-4888. We have many people in queue, so let's hear from Ma'at from New York.
Yes, good afternoon to the family. I really enjoy hearing the brothers and sisters. They're so excellent. But I want to share two things. First of all, everybody's so right on target in terms, mostly, Hillary Clinton. Ali mentioned Haiti and Libya and other callers, and another brother mentioned Ron Brown, Vince Forza, and some of the other scandals. But I also want to remind everyone about Honduras, because particularly when just recently, I don't know the day, but it must have been the last day or two, Bertha Caceres, who was an environmental activist and, you know, saving the rivers from the mining and the oil, was assassinated in her home. And if we recall, as regards Honduras, Zelaya, who was a type of president that was, you know, dealing with the poor and redistributing land, when that coup went down, at first it seemed like the U.S. was going to do the right thing. Well, that was a trick. But Clinton was the Secretary of State, and that situation is going down now in Honduras, where a lot of people are being killed or disappeared, relates right back to Hillary Clinton and her policies. So we got to wake up the sheeple, because there's nothing that, besides the fact of the dynasty that this with a Clinton or a Bush. The last point I want to make is dealing with this latest media tactic, okay? So David Icke, whose recent book is A Phantom Self, got to check it out. I will be doing it. But I was watching the CNN at the 11 a.m. hour, and I don't usually watch it, but I wanted to see how they were going to spin this fiasco, as it were, breakdown with the Republicans. And all of a sudden, I think her name is Tamron, I can't think of her full name now, the host comes on air, breaks up this, you know, how are we going to deal with this Donald Trump line, and says that the LAPD is about to have a press conference because a former cop has found a knife near the OJ former residence, you know. So that's the reason why I mentioned David Icke, is he said they have you watching a movie, and I think that says it best.
It's true. You can't help but feel that way from the tone, the general. You know, I asked some time ago, is there nobody left in the newsrooms of America who can tell what a news story is anymore? This was at the beginning of when Trump was being shaped to be looked at as a viable candidate, and the media were basically choreographing his ascendancy as a leading and preferred candidate. They were creating him at the time, and they did a marvelous job. And now they say, well, how, I mean, could we stand a Donald Trump? Well, you created this person. Many people that you, the media, decide, well, hey, in conjunction with the corporate elites, with the party establishment, with the duopoly, they say, well, let's give favorable coverage to this person, and for reasons I have explained here. And now it's blown up. Donald Trump has played the game so well. It couldn't have been a better edition of Celebrity Apprentice, right?
They're getting their comeuppance, as it were.
Yes, it is. It is.
And thank you. I look forward to my other sisters and brothers. Thank you so much, Etrice.
Thank you so much for your call today. Rico from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Rico. You're on the air.
Okay. I want to talk to you, Etrice Lee.
Speaking.
Oh, because what I'm hearing on PRN is something quite different.
Oh, I don't know. You're on the air, though. Go right ahead.
All righty. Look, the reason I'm calling, because I've been listening to your show for the past couple of days, and I found that the guests that are calling in are very informative. But like everything else, I think they all have great approach as to the problem that has been going on, especially with the electoral system here in the United States. And what I would like to hear is people coming up with the solution. And the solution, in my view, is that one has to debunk the entire system. Now, bringing it down or reducing it down to the, especially when it comes down to the black community, in reducing it down to the black community, I think what we must do is develop some sort of an annex within the community, educational center, to begin to educate and inform black people. Because I've, in my view, I could be wrong, I see where most black people are swimming in an ocean of ignorance and deception. And that's the reason why people like Hillary Clinton, Charlie Rangel, and all these other elite politicians that affiliated with both parties can easily exploit these people.
Oh, well, I think what you're pointing to is something that has been said for such a long time. But I have to ask you, do you think at this point that you want to, can you afford to turn from the moment right now? What do you do in the moment right now, you think? What's the best strategy for the moment that we're in?
I would say for the moment that we're in, I think the best strategy right now, if you listen to some of what, say, people like Bernie Sanders have outlined, what Professor Wolf has outlined. Okay, so from the moment, I think in the moment what we need to first educate this public primarily about economics and the different models of economics that does exist. Because what happened, I don't think black people are well informed when it comes on to especially the various models of economics. And I think that information need to be passed on to them, because we have been so entrenched and we have internalized only one model of economics here within this nation. So that has to be changed. And the
I agree with you, but I'm asking, let me just put it another way. This is an election year. We are seeing how it's developing so far. What do you think is something that people can do to take full strategic advantage of the moment that we're in?
Well, what I would suggest is this. I am not going to recommend that no one should go out there and vote, but I'm going to say if it turns out that someone like let's say Hillary Clinton turned out to be the selective person for the Democratic Party, okay, she will not get my vote, but I will give a vote to some other third party. That's what I think they should do at the time to send a very strong message. Other than that, and also, too, I personally would recommend to Bernie Sanders that if he should go into the Democratic, what you said, convention, and for whatever, how these numbers should turn out because of the delegates, let's say, manipulation and process within that, you know, convention. And if he doesn't put up a strong fight to say that if I am going to support this candidate, which is not me, and these are the different venues that you must follow, I will totally disassociate myself from this party and take this group and begin to do something else, somewhere else. Because the way I see it, this political machine right now, as it is in place, has been there for hundreds of years, and there is no way to actually take this machine and make it right unless disassembling this machine. So as far as I'm concerned, I will say to people, I'm not going to say to people don't vote, but I'm going to say if you're going to vote for someone that you know that you're going to consider the less of two evils, don't vote for neither one and vote for a third party and begin to work and let's see how we can come up with a whole new political infrastructure.
Okay, Rico, you have my vote. I'm electing you to something.
Thank you.
I'm electing you as the person who should begin this movement because I agree with you wholeheartedly. There has to be, right now, people shouldn't be sitting back and watching the spectacle. This is exactly the time to organize. Use what you've got. Use the advantages that present themselves for organizing and mobilizing for something different. Do what Donald Trump did. Donald Trump basically hijacked the Republican Party and its structure and its processes to his own liking and to his own agenda. What has to happen here is that with the ascendancy, if you will, of Bernie Sanders, his campaign seems to be doing all right. You tag along with that. You use that momentum and energy. You use the same nationwide network that is burgeoning now, and you build an independent movement on it. This was the story of the Rainbow Coalition. You use the same tactics of the Democratic Party. You use some of the structure of the Democratic Party itself, and you begin to form a formidable coalition of effort. And this is where I was hoping that we could see some movement in that direction. But I think that is beginning to happen. People are beginning to understand. You have to move almost, Walter Maddox talks about military tactics. You have to employ military tactics in order to achieve a major advantage here. And the advantage would be to mobilize people who are ready to accept a responsibility to build something different. They want to hear, and they are hearing, and they're amenable to hearing a different message. This is the time to really, really organize, dig in and organize, and it begins at the local level. Thank you so much, Rico, for calling today, and thank you all for calling and for being so consistently extraordinary in the thoughts and the analyses that you offer for our consideration. I really do appreciate that because it means that the program is a teaching tool and an effective way of bringing communities closer together. We don't have to agree. That is not at all what this is all about. It is important, however, to sincerely offer your views for public inspection, and that is a very, very brave thing to do. But when we disagree, as you can tell here, we are always very respectful about it, and we offer our own countervailing views, also with a great deal of respect. So I thank you very much for keeping that level of discourse on this program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. It is Friday, leading into the weekend. Do yourselves a favor. Have nothing to do with any negative people. Banish them from your life and stay positive all weekend long. Surround yourself with people who mean you well, who bring good things to you, and who add positive dimension to your life. We'll see each other Monday, God willing, at the creek don't rise. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.